In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. On this show, the topic of organized stalking is examined in depth because the cases are known to be at epidemic levels. The effects of gang stalking can cause severe and irreversible harm, and the media often take an easy route of portraying all victims as mentally ill. In several of these cases, there was mention of high technology warfare being deployed. Past guests Josephine Grace and author of the book Camellia, A Strange But True Story of Invisible Spies, Heroin Addiction and Homeland Security by Robert Guffey, have described how a group of highly skilled individuals utilize advanced camouflage technology such as invisible suits to harass, attack, and injure. There are hundreds of patents filed for invisibility cloaking technology and invisibility detection devices. Among those U.S. patents is Project Camellia, filed by engineer Richard Schoengart. He joins us to talk more about the design of this electro-optical camouflage system, making objects invisible within the visible spectrum of light. Richard Schoengart served in the Navy. He studied at their School of Electronics in San Francisco. From there, he went to Japan to set up a communication station for the U.S. Navy. By 1957, he returned to St. Louis, Missouri, and went to St. Louis University. He worked for McDonnell Aircraft, moved to California in 1961. He was president of the Orange County Engineering Council in 1967. He was branch head of the Navy Metrology Engineering Center in Pomona. He was a chief warrant officer, too, with the Naval Reserve, and in 1988 worked with the Defense Contract Management Agency. There are many more accomplishments, but he since retired in October 2004. He joins us today to talk more about invisibility technology. Richard, welcome to Another News.
Thank you.
Robert Guffey's book, Camellia, brought more attention to your engineering abilities, specifically the patenting of an invisibility technology in context with organized stalking. Would you please give listeners a sense of what led you to start developing invisibility technology, and please take us through some of the process?
Well, when I was on the B-2 program over in Pico Rivera, a buddy and I were walking around the campus there one day at lunch, and we were talking about this very subject, you know, if we put up a screen and led people to believe they were looking at the background when they were actually seeing through an object. Well, we would put up a screen that would shield someone, and then it would appear as if they were seeing the person. They would perceive they were looking all the way through and seeing the background, but they weren't. They were seeing just the person in front with the shield, with the particular suit that they were wearing or whatever. We thought this would be a great concept. So that's how I got to thinking about it and how this could be implemented.
What year was this, by the way?
That was back in 1986, 87. I was over in Pico Rivera working on the B-2 program. That's when I had the concept before that, but that's when I started thinking seriously about it.
So you were able to think seriously about it because you were involved in other specialized engineering operations that...
Right.
And this is basically a screen that would be put up in front of an object, and you would basically see the image of what was behind that object, and it would seamlessly blend into the landscape?
Well, that's one idea. Another would be that the person who wanted to be invisible had a suit that had little cells on it, maybe 1,000 or more of these little cells, and they would pick up the background and project it on a screen that would make it appear as if the person looking at the one who's wearing the suit, they would just see straight through it, and it would appear as if they're looking at the background directly. So the person could actually walk across the background, and it would shift according to where the person's walking to reflect the background behind them.
Tell us how you begin to work on the prototype of this idea.
Well, first it was just a concept that I put into a PowerPoint presentation, you know, this sort of thing, and then I talked about it at conferences I went to. The first one I went to was actually down in Texas. It was an electro-optical conference in San Antonio, and that's where I made my first presentation. And this was in 1993.
How was that presentation received?
It was received with a lot of interest. I got a lot of inquiries about it. People wanted more detail. And this was, of course, my first presentation, so I didn't have a lot of detail to go into, but it developed over the years as I got more involved with it.
You came up with the concept, and you put it into a PowerPoint presentation, and you made the presentations, but did you start to actually build any of this?
I worked together with another physicist out in the middle of nowhere. This physicist he's a good friend of mine, and he and I went out and actually set up some tests sort of in the field, I guess you would say, where we would set up a little mock-up and actually see if we could conceal something in that manner. And it worked okay. We got test results that were satisfactory to us, but they had to be refined, you know, and developed. So
you were able to maybe get confirmation that the concept is doable, and it would have to be refined, meaning smaller, maybe cells, maybe more flexible cells. And
right. Exactly. And my associate, his name is Lev Berger, L-E-V, first name, and last name, B-E-R-G-E-R. He has a little company out there, and he gave me a lot of assistance. And then we went together to another conference back in Pennsylvania and made a presentation that was well received also. And it was basically an extension of the first presentation I made.
Were you able to create the prototype and bring it with you during a presentation?
No, we never got that far as building a prototype, because it was still conceptual, and it would all depend on the people who were interested in it and what they really wanted. If they wanted a suit, you know, we'd have to develop a suit, but we never got that far. And then some companies stepped in and started doing work. This one in San Diego, SCIC, I believe it is, and they actually had a contract with one of the major government agencies, and they did some work on it. And I had a meeting with one of the people, but it didn't go too far. They were kind of picking my brains, and I was trying to figure out what they were really doing, but they couldn't tell me because it was, a contract of their own, some proprietary rights and so forth. But right now, I've been retired 4 years. I'm not really in the technology field anymore. So all of this is just from memory.
For listeners, SCIC is Science Applications International Corporation.
Right, I believe that's correct.
There are a network of specialized corporations like SCIC. There's American Technology Corporation, there's American Research Associates, and some of these corporations are developing directed energy weapons or anti-gravity devices.
Right.
Richard and Camilio, Robert Guffey's book, you mentioned that the U.S. military had used your invisibility technology that you patented. When did this happen, and how did you find out?
Well, I found out that through the questions they asked me, I could tell that they already knew quite a bit about it. They did reveal that they had gotten some information through a friend of mine, and so I figured that's pretty good information, and they knew basically what they were talking about. And some people were at the first presentation I made to the Air Force down in San Antonio, and then Lev Berger and I went to the one in Philadelphia, made a presentation. So there were a lot of people there that were interested in it. So I know that some of them were in the defense field and were definitely working on things of this sort. So I feel almost certain they took my ideas and used them. And they could have infringed on my patent, but I didn't have anything concrete to really prove that.
Were you upset about this?
Well, somewhat, yes. But the military can use any invention. I don't know if you're aware of that or not, but they can use any invention by anybody when they're using it for a military purpose, and there's absolutely nothing the owner can do about it. That's the way it is. If it's used for defense purposes, there's nothing they can do about it.
How did you find out that this was the case, that they were using your technology?
Well, just from the questions and how they asked them, I could deduce that they were using the same concept.
I suspect those night vision goggles mentioned in Robert Guffey's book, Camilio, weren't merely devices allowing one to see at night. I was thinking maybe they were special optics allowing those who were wearing invisibility suits to make themselves visible to each other. What are your thoughts on that?
I thought about that, but personally, I don't believe they had that ability to... I think they merely had the ability to see someone who were wearing the goggles, that's all.
It makes you think about the question, how do the people wearing invisibility suits see each other and coordinate maybe something together?
It's a good question. They would have to know the details of the suit, how the suit is made, and how it projects the background on it. And so they would have to be close associates in order to do this, but I'm assuming they could figure out a way to realize that objective.
One thing that was very interesting to me in Robert's book, when he was describing how the weight of the person wearing the suit would sometimes give away the presence of somebody in an invisibility suit.
You mean by showing some imprint of their footprint or something like that? Or
creaking on a wooden floor?
Yeah, right. Yeah, they would have to be very careful about any sounds they made, walking, or imprints they made, because these could be seen by someone.
In Robert's book, Camellio, he also mentioned there seemed to be technology that was changing the perception of the main character's home. And
yeah, distorting the appearance of something or an environment where they'd been or something of this sort or where they are. Yes, that could certainly be done.
Can you describe that a little bit more for listeners so they have an idea of what level of technology could be used?
It would have to be pretty sophisticated to be able to project images that to fool someone else and make them think they're seeing something different than they really are. It would have to be have some elements of holography or something of this sort, you know, to give a false impression of an environment. But it could be done.
And you're saying this because you're familiar with that technology?
Well, somewhat, yes. I know that it's being experimented with, holography. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, holography or holography.
We now hear part of that interview referencing the invisibility suits with Robert Guffey, author of Camellio.
Everything starts escalating. They're bombarding him with what I would call sort of programmed hallucinations. He would go to the window, and he'd open up the window and look out, and the view that was always there is not there. Now there's some science fictional Boris Vallejo-looking landscape outside with like three moons in the sky. And then Damien would go and open the door, and it would be the scene as it had always been. Go, you know, close the door, come back, look through the window, there it is again.
Wait, during the day?
During the day, yes. Wait, during the day or night.
Did you actually see the window that he referred to?
Did I see the window?
Do you know the window he's talking about?
I know exactly where it is in the apartment he was living in, but
right.
I didn't see that myself. He
I got
described
you.
That to me.
That I understand, but I was curious if you actually you know the window he's referring to and what's on the other side of it?
Oh, just a parking lot. You know, it's a wooden fence, a parking lot, and, you know, a Vons.
What do you think is going on here? Is this Damien not giving you an accurate description, or it's something else?
It's important to point out that in that same exact area where Damien was living at the time, or these corporations, the SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation, and ATC, American Technology Corporation, they were within walking distance of Damien's apartment. And their specialty at that time was developing these exotic weapons, like acoustic bullets, for example,
mm-hmm.
directed energy weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And these exotic weapons can be used to create phenomena that if you didn't know any better, you would think your house was haunted. For example, one time I was on the phone with him, and Damien, who's, as I said, he's been in and out of jail, he doesn't scare easily. He was frightened like a little girl because objects on his mantle, you know, were suddenly shattering into pieces as if there were poltergeists haunting the room. And I think that what they were using was what's called acoustic bullets, which is essentially projectiles made of sound, which is what ATC, American Technology Corporation, was specializing in at that same exact time. Both those corporations have since moved from the area. Mm. SAIC is split into two different corporations, one called SAIC and the other called Leidos, I believe, and moved to Virginia.
But Damien is now out, and you're getting these reports from him about some very unusual things happening around him. And now you're thinking, this is very real. Something's actually happening to him. I'm curious.
Oh, yes. I was curious because the things he was describing, for example, he started describing people in his house who he could not see, people who were physically interacting with him who were not visible to him. One time he was in the bathroom and he was moving the medicine cabinet, the mirrored medicine cabinet in the bathroom. As he was moving that cabinet mirror, he suddenly caught a sight of them in the mirror, but only as the mirror was in motion. At one point, he could see them as kind of these aura-like dots in the air, a kind of outline of a very small person in the house with him. It seemed to me when he said that, Damien's not a physicist, but I started thinking about, okay, like let's say that there was invisibility technology and they were using it on Damien. If it's light-bending technology, maybe it would make sense that you could see the person in the mirror, but not in the mirror. So I started thinking along those lines and wondering how much of this could, in fact, be true. And in the midst of all this, other things were happening. For example, Damien would be lying in bed at night, and then suddenly a silhouette of a hand would appear on the wall, and the hand would have the shadow of a gun in it, and the hand would tilt down towards Damien's head and then tilt up again. He saw this sort of black, amorphous energy crawl across the carpet of his room, fill up his leather jacket that was lying there on the carpet, and then the leather jacket crawled across the room. In the midst of all this, as this is happening, periodically, the special agent who I mentioned earlier, Lita Johnson, would show up at the door. The people who are parked outside, who are shining the halogen lights through his windows at all hours of the day and night, they would suddenly back out and leave. And then this car would pull in, and it's Lita Johnson. She'd come out, knock at the door, and say, "Have you changed your mind? Would you like to cooperate now? Would you like to give us any information?" And he would say no, and then she would give him her card and say, "If you change your mind, call the number on the card," and then get back in the car, drive away. Then all the other cars would pull back in, and the harassment would start up all over again.
Jeez, they made it real obvious.
They made it very obvious, yes. Now, it's important to point out that Damien had been addicted to heroin for a long time up to this point. Heroin is not a hallucinogen. But also, as I said, I've known him since I was 16, so I kind of know his unique brand of craziness and how it manifests in his mind. And it would not normally manifest in making up whole people in situations like this. So I asked him to give me the phone number of the woman, because she gave him the card with the phone number. So he gives me the phone number, and I call her, and I had a whole conversation with her. The transcript of that conversation is in the book. And she was very disturbed, A, that I was calling her, mm-hmm. B, that anyone would be asking her questions about any of this. And I asked her, I said, are you following my friend? And she then launched into kind of CYA language to try to back out of the conversation. She would say, no one in my agency is currently following your friend. That kind of noncommittal language, the whole conversation went like that.
However, another agency is actually contracted anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. That, you know, she was probably literally telling the truth. No one in my agency is following your friend. Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably true. No one in her agency in the NCIS was following him. So, you know, they contracted out to either another agency or even they recruit civilians. The reason why they're visible in the mirror?
Right.
I asked Richard that, and he said, well, basically, it's because they're cloaking the suit, but they're not cloaking the mirror. The way the suit works is that it's essentially a series of cells, and the cells replicate whatever the background is onto all these little cells that are on the suit. So it's this skin-tight suit that reflects whatever the background is, just like a chameleon. And in fact, I remember at the time commenting to Damien that it was rather similar to the blur suit that's in Phil Dick's science fiction novel, Scanner Darkly, which is all about this narcotics officer. They made a film out of it. Richard Linklater made a film starring Keanu Reeves. And this Bob Arctor, this narcotics officer, is wearing the skin-tight blur suit that is essentially the same kind of technology. I remember Damien saying, it's almost like they're taking Phil Dick's ideas and manifest them in reality. It's too bad Phil Dick didn't write happier books, because maybe they would just make those into reality instead. Just coincidentally, the very first person who interviewed me about Camellia when the book came out mm-hmm. was Tessa Dick, Phil Dick's widow. She has a radio show called Ancient of Days.
Okay.
And I start telling her about all of this, And then she said, well, this reminds me exactly of all the stuff that Phil and I went through in the 70s in Southern California. All the same kind of bombarding of hallucinations, hearing disembodied voices coming through a radio that was not even plugged into the wall. All that stuff happened to Phil, Dick, and her in the 70s. So this isn't new. He was dealing with directed energy, bypassing the ear canal. There was an invention called the Neurophone. Patrick Flanagan created something called the Neurophone back in the 70s that could bypass the ear canal and put voices directly into your head. I think Phil Dick and his wife were probably dealing with that level of technology in the 70s, not the invisibility technology. In 2003, the invisibility technology was still experimental, and I think that Damien was a guinea pig. I don't think that they're still experimenting with the invisibility technology. I think it's not experimental, it's operational. They're just using it. And it's not just homeless people, drug addicts. They like to focus on people who are on the fringes, you know, homeless people, drug addicts, people who, if they will come out and say that this stuff is happening to them, naturally you would think that they're crazy. But they're also using it on people who are quite prominent. Not a lot of people know that Gloria Naylor, who is a famous, very well-respected novelist who wrote Women of Brewster Place and Mama Day and many other novels, she wrote a book fairly recently called 1996. Her regular publishers would not publish it. They thought she'd gone off the deep end or something. But it's a semi-autobiographical novel, 1996, and it's called that because for her, all these events started for her in 1996. But she describes almost the same exact experiences as what Damien went through.
That was part of an interview with Robert Guffey, the author of Chameleo, that also references the invisibility technology conceptualized by our guest, Richard Schauinger. Let's switch over to a particular individual that you're familiar with. His name's Thomas Bowerly.
Yes.
In two past interviews discussing organized stalking, some of the perpetrators were described as wearing invisibility suits. In another prominent gang stalking and covert harassment case, Thomas Bowerly, a musician who also goes by the stage name Tommy Nerd, collected photographic evidence of people wearing invisibility suits.
Right.
You know the case and authenticated his evidence as definitive proof he is under high-tech surveillance. Are you able to determine if they're using prototype invisibility suits or something more advanced?
I'm sure that prototype suits are being used. I'm positive of it, but I, you know, can't prove it because I haven't worked for those people, and I've been out of the technical field now 4 years, so I can't really give you any specifics. But I'm certain that there are some invisibility suits that are being developed.
What was your opinion on some of the photographic evidence that Thomas Bowerly brought forward?
I thought it was very interesting, intriguing, and I think he had a good case for proving that he'd been stalked.
He sent me a DVD of some of the material, and in that DVD there was some holographic projection that manifested in the front yard. Did you see that particular evidence?
I don't think I saw that particular one. No. But he did send me some information. It's been quite a while ago since I looked at it.
A source has told Thomas Bowerly that he was testing invisibility suits for a branch of the armed forces back in 1983, and they were made of mylar and chafed horribly on the skin. How far back does invisibility technology development go?
Well, I would say it goes back to the early 90s, but I couldn't pinpoint a time when it actually started.
Tom was also informed that these invisibility suits were deployed to Libya and captured Gaddafi. The invisible intruders were in Gaddafi's compound and left signs that they were there to make him realize that he could be killed at any point. What are your thoughts about these types of covert operations?
Yes, I read the accounts of that raid, but I personally don't think they wore any invisibility suits. I don't think they had that technology to do that. I don't think they needed it from the way they were operating. That's my own opinion.
Tom had pointed out that somebody mentioned that to him. According to Tom's sources, there are two types of invisibility suits often used. One is designed to reflect, refract, or absorb light. The other is active and powered. The active and powered suits require a lot of electricity or a power source, and operatives have become ill with excruciating headaches. Tom was told that there are many prototypes being tested, but if you would, could you share your thoughts on this observation?
Well, I think Tom may know a lot more than I do about it, but because I don't believe that they've advanced too far in that field as yet, and I don't think they were used for this raid back there in Iraq or wherever it occurred. As far as being active and being powered, I don't think that's been attempted. I've never heard of it. Most of what I've heard about is just suits, sort of passive to a degree. Some would have powered if they had to power some kind of little cells on their suit. They would need to power those, but this would be dangerous kind of technology that would cause them to get ill and that sort of thing. That just seems a little bit far-fetched to me.
Yeah, Tom was definitely suffering from a lot of harassment and was doing his own investigative work, you know, in addition to living his life, going to work, doing his job. And he's a media person who, as a journalist, he conducted an interview with Hillary Clinton in 2000. And one of the plates, license plates he traced belonged to a vehicle owned by a woman who is a trained engineer, a former employee of UBS Financial. And that company asked Hillary Clinton for help. They made a big donation to the Clinton Foundation. But he was pointing out that this is one of the cars that kept driving around his neighborhood, and he saw it again and again. He has police friends and colleagues who can help him with investigation, and he found out that her husband was a trained engineer and tied to several defense contractors. Are these covert operations sanctioned by the government, or do the institutions that win the research contracts get to choose who they target?
Well, my own opinion would be that whoever has this contract with the government agency is under their direction. Whatever they're doing is directly under the direction of the agency they're working for. So I don't think they would have the freedom to decide exactly how they're going to do this. It would be highly choreographed by their agency and highly controlled. That's my own opinion.
He also gave you a copy of the report he gave to the FBI, and he wanted to know if you could please talk about the quality of his investigation into this covert surveillance.
I remember looking at them, and they did. I did see images that appeared to be people moving around, objects moving around. Right.
Tom Bowerly talked about how this technology can be defeated by using an X-ray feature in the iPad's photo booth. And this is an application, a program in a tablet. And then you take the X-ray photo of the X-ray photo, he says, and that nonlinear optical invisibility can be beaten by using the stretch feature on the iPad to rebend the light to uncover the operatives. He also used colorblind simulation software. And these are methods he used to make the invisibility camouflage stand out in digital photographs. I don't know if you've heard about this, but could you talk about other risk mitigations with these suits?
Yeah, I think that it would take a highly sophisticated piece of equipment to bend those light waves and to actually see what's behind the person. I suppose it could be done, but it sounds to me somewhat far-fetched to actually believe that we could do that, or anyone could do that, is what I'm saying. It would just take a lot of complex equipment.
We've mentioned on this show the technology of liquid crystal suits, and that someone could project a human image through it and would be undetectable as a person. Did you work with liquid crystal technology?
Yes, as far as using screens of different types, yes, I have. But the kind you would have to use to wrap around a person would have to be very, very sophisticated, beyond what I've ever seen.
I understand.
Incorporated into suits and uniforms.
Past guest Josephine Grace, who was the subject of organized stalking for a variety of reasons, among, I think, was that as a journalist on public access TV, she exposed some sensitive topics about Monsanto, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and the U.S. Army. She has also encountered what she concludes as people wearing invisible suits in her yard and on her rooftop, and she has taken photographs using a camera with a flash at night. Some of the figures have a smoky appearance. Can you talk about what might this technology appear as under flash photography at night?
Well, it would no doubt, in my mind, be you would have reflections of light, and whatever the person is using as a uniform to conceal themselves would reflect back on the observer, at the observer. So it would, to me, show up as sparkling or glimpses of light of different intensities, perhaps. And I think it would definitely reveal that some object is there. That's about all I could say about it, because I'm not really an optics person, but I know there would be reflections and some evidence that there's an object there.
In your PowerPoint presentation, specifically the page on fragility, reflections, and glint, it mentioned that,
right,
quote, reflections from sun and ambient light will reveal,
right,
the presence of a cloaked object. How are cloaking or invisibility suits protected against detection from infrared or ultraviolet and thermal sensors?
I think they're not really protected that well. There's things that they could do to mitigate the effects of that kind of detection, but I don't think they could really overcome it. I don't see how they could.
Were there methods that were being tested or developed to protect against that detection?
I'm sure that they were working on ways to try to mitigate against that, but I'm not privy to any that I know of was working on such a device, they would be thinking along those lines of how they could conceal the uniform, right, so it would not provide evidence of its appearance.
We now hear part of an interview with Josephine Grace, who also experienced what could be described as people wearing invisibility suits harassing and attacking her.
What had happened was, after I started having these symptoms and hearing people running and walking on my roof, I was laying in my back room one day where there is no attic above that roof. It used to be a back porch. Someone just put a roof over, just a wooden roof. That's it. And I would hear this landing. Evidently, they jumped from the ground up using some kind of jetpack, hard landing on the roof. My roof has never leaked. I've always taken care of my home. Then I would start being targeted. So one day, 2 weeks in, like I said, I got so angry I yelled at the top of my lungs in that room, in my own home. I yelled, "Get off of my roof in the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord." And I yelled it 3 times as loud as I could. And all I heard was shit. So whatever human was in that suit was ticked off that I knew they were up there. To proceed on, after all this is transpiring for a couple months, my roof starts leaking. So my friend and I, we got on my roof and we spread 2 tarps using rope attached to chimneys and the bathroom outlet pipe and trees on the side and the privacy fence along the side.
Josephine, before you continue, I just want to alert listeners that throughout this whole interview, we've been experiencing a series of beeps. And I just want to mention that this is happening way more than any other interview. That being said, please continue. Tarps on the roof.
Yes, so we had secured them with just regular old rope. Well, next thing you know, these invisibility suited, I call them cowards, they started tripping on these ropes. And, you know, sometimes it got so ridiculous, and I know this sounds strange, but I had to laugh because I knew that they were killing me. I knew I was dying. My dog had died. And so I tried to make joke out of the whole thing because, you know, if I'm going down, I started a blog. I'd never done anything like that in my life. I don't have Facebook, Twitter, nothing. And so I thought, you know, if I'm going to record this for posterity, I'm going to have fun. So one day I'm being targeted out the wazoo. I'm hearing them on the roof. So I just thought, I'm going to start loud music and start dancing and see what happens. And do you know, I was dancing, and wherever I went, I would hear them jump to where I was going. And so then I started jumping back and forth about 4 feet. Oh, my goodness. You could hear them. They were getting mad. And I just had so much fun. But in the end, they made me so ill that night. I guess they were so angry that I played with them. I was playing with my assaulters, my attacker. At least that's what our government calls the people who attacked Cuban diplomats. They call them attacks. So I was playing with my attackers, and I guess they're not used to that.
No, I wouldn't think they're used to something like that, but these individuals on the roof in these invisibility suits, you suspect that they had directed energy weapons. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, sir. But the first targeting occurred from the rental house to the south of me that the Yuriks were renting. They came in with a white van, a red car, and 2 personal cars for the 2 parents in the house, and they had 3 children. And oddly enough, 10 years earlier, just on a whim, mind you, I had read a book about an ex-FBI agent who talked about how they moved. They moved FBI married agents into homes next to persons of interest that they wanted surveyed, and that usually they had 2.5 children. Well, these people had 3 children. And what the white van was for, I have no idea, but I told a friend about the white van a year in that was there every day, and after that it disappeared. It never was there again. And I also told them during the same conversation about the red car, And after that day, the red car was parked on the grass as if it had been abandoned long ago, and there was no license on it. So these people only had their two cars there left that they used personally. Mr. Yerk first came to the home with a suit on every day to go to work and black short cropped hair. By the time I mentioned him in my blog, he started growing a beard. Then he started growing his hair long. Then he started wearing tie-dye T-shirts. So I don't know who the man was, but I noticed he had some kind of whole house energy unit, directed energy weapons unit, because all the high magnetic radiation came from the south side of the house and then dissipated toward the north, but still much higher than usual. And we're talking off the charts danger level, because I finally bought my own EMF reader, a tri-field. And I've since learned that magnetic radiation is what they use specifically to entrain minds and brainwash people. When Mr. Yerk had parties where his friends and family were present, the only thing between my house and his was a driveway, the radiation would stop. The first time it happened, I walked in the door, I fell on my knees, I cried, I prayed. And then I laid down and tried to sleep.
That was part of the interview with Josephine Grace, who endured and documented a strange high-tech level of organized stalking. Richard, you mentioned that invisibility technology can be used in psychological warfare. After working with Robert Guffey and hearing about similar cases of invisibility suit technology being used subversively against civilians, did you suspect it would be tested on these people?
A thought has occurred to me that it might be used to intimidate people, to psychologically unbalance them. But again, I don't have any evidence that this was ever done.
What were your thoughts on what Robert Guffey was preparing in his book regarding his friend who was bringing forth evidence that he was harassed and attacked by these individuals in using this technology?
What was the person's name? Or
Dion, I believe.
Oh, Dion Poor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've read all of Robert's information on this subject, and it sounded pretty reasonable to me that Dion was under surveillance, and that what he was seeing was a result of experimentation of this sort. Yes.
There you have the evidence. In terms of the technology being used subversively and basically in the wrong hands, how would people protect themselves against this level of subversion?
I think it would be very difficult if people are under observation by defense agencies and people who are doing this kind of work. It'd be very difficult to be protected from it.
Would you recommend anything?
Not offhand. I would have to do some study to do that, really.
You and Robert are members of the Scottish Rite Freemason Lodge, and he wrote about your conversation about the cross-section of Freemasonry, scientific technology, and Rosicrucianism. Would you please talk about what is examined at this intersection, and is it important to have an understanding of the esoteric realm when developing high-level technology?
Well, I think it would be helpful if people did have this esoteric knowledge that Rosicrucians and some people have. I would say this: Freemasonry, I don't think, has anything specific along that line. They use this. The knowledge they have, they use it in symbols and things for their members, and they don't have any real esoteric knowledge of it. Rosicrucians, on the other hand, they do get into this more in detail, but most of what they do is intuitive psychological experiments, and it does not involve electronics or optical equipment or anything like that. Mostly developing people so that they can develop their own intuition and how to observe and pick up signals from other people through thought transmission kind of process. But this is more biological and psychological than anything else.
I suppose it would also help to focus the mind, to be able to concentrate in a much more sharper way, to work in the scientific fields, I would imagine.
Right, exactly, yeah. And there are people working in this field, and there's even a government agency that was doing something along that line in the Army. And I found out by accident that the unit was still operating down in Los Alamitos Air Station. As I was driving around one day, I thought, wow, there's that unit I thought was no longer operating. But they took some gifted soldiers or military people and trained them to do all kinds of ESP and using their mind and projecting thoughts and so forth. And it was an active unit in the Army, and it apparently still is working.
Are you suggesting that they're weaponized?
I don't know about weaponized, if you want to call people as being a weapon. Yes, they'd be weaponized. But I don't know of any technology they had that they're working on, other than training these people to focus their attention, their concentration on a subject and or an object and see what's behind it. And I know there's experiments they've used to try to determine what's in a building somewhere. They'll be given a picture of it and the location, the physical location of it, and we'll try to concentrate and see what's in that building or behind that object. They are doing these things.
Is this called remote viewing?
Right, remote viewing, exactly.
Since Robert Guffey's book has been published and he's been doing interviews and talking to the public about this material, and you are in the book referenced many times, have you gotten any feedback as a result?
Not very much. A few people have mentioned to me Robert's book, and they're interested in it, but that's about the extent of it.
Do other Lodge members talk with you about this technology and your work in this field?
Well, no, not really. I don't have any brethren that are into that or to the depth that you're speaking of. No, it's been mostly through Robert and some of my other associates, such as Lev Berger out in the desert.
Getting back to Thomas Bowerly's work, what can targeted individuals learn from Thomas Bowerly's investigative work?
They could perhaps figure out a way to detect people that were prowling around and trying to conceal themselves. There are ways they could protect against it with some optical methods or electro-optical methods. They probably have to have some real technical knowledge of electro-optics and so forth in order to do this, but there's things they could read about and perhaps develop some countermeasures against.
Richard, is there anything that you might want to say to the listeners about this technology and how it's being used right now and the ethics of this? What are your thoughts?
I think the ethics of it is a little murky because it would be hard to define whether or not a government agency is acting ethically or not. If they have a mission to do this sort of thing, they've been given a charter to experiment, I think it would be difficult to prove that they don't have a right to do this. If they're infringing on your privacy, you might be able to get some definite evidence of that through electro-optical means. So I think it's worth pursuing, but I wouldn't know exactly. I wouldn't be able to give any concrete advice on how to do this.
Richard, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show and help bring the listeners up to date on a very real technology being at times subversively deployed against peaceful civilians, activists, and good citizens. Thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, certainly. I hope I was able to help you to some minor degree.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.